everyone. This is the Sports Gig Podcast, your home for news in the sports media world. I'm Dr. Chris Bacon from Middle Tennessee State University. In this episode, the Memphis Grizzlies announce an exclusive sports betting partner. The Supreme Court says an antitrust lawsuit against the NFL can move forward, and the Masters adjust its final round coverage to avoid competing with the NFL. Today's special guest, author Brian Erzepa. His book, You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports, comes out on November 5th. And in our job segment, Team USA needs someone to develop multimedia content. A Chicago sports radio station is looking for a new host for PM Drive, and a TV sports anchor MMJ role is open in Norfolk. A great show is lined up and ready to go, so let's get started.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, no, 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 no. It's bacon!
Here's your Bacon's Bits for the week. Another week and another state that allows sports betting. Tennessee became the 19th state to allow sports gambling on November 1st, and it didn't take long for the Memphis Grizzlies and FanDuel to announce their new partnership. FanDuel is the official sports betting partner and exclusive daily fantasy partner for the Grizzlies. The company will also have access to use the Grizzlies' marks and logos on their online products, along with signage at the FedEx Forum and media spots. The Supreme Court turned down an appeal by the National Football League on November 2nd, saying an antitrust lawsuit can move forward against the NFL and how it sells its rights to telecast games. Now, here's how this works. The league pools together the rights for all 32 teams for their broadcast and streaming partners. The argument is, does this limit competition in violation of federal law? A lower court ruled that the contract with DirecTV may do just that. What does this all mean? The lawsuit will move forward, and it could affect how the league handles future broadcast and streaming deals. Speaking of the NFL, it doesn't take a genius to realize it rules Sundays in the fall. The Masters Tournament has never had to compete until this year, after it was moved from April to November due to the COVID-19 pandemic. CBS is moving up final round coverage of the tournament to air between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Eastern Time on November 15th, in hopes it'll all be over before the late afternoon NFL game between the LA Chargers and Denver Broncos. They'll still have to compete with college football on Saturday and early NFL games, though, so don't be surprised if ratings take a huge hit this year because of that. The Masters starts November 12th. Our guest this week is Brian Erzepa. He's the author of the new book, You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports, which comes out November 5th. Brian, welcome to the show.
Chris, thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, first of all, we're a couple of days away from the release on a personal level. Now, you've got to be excited as this day creeps ever so closer.
Yeah, from what I understand, there is a pretty big day coming up next week. So I think everyone is talking about my book, but... Yeah,
that election thing. Don't worry about the election. That's not, this book is what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, we'll fast forward through Tuesday, get right to Thursday for my book. So that's, yeah, definitely super excited about that.
So that had to have been strategic. We need to get over the hangover effect of whatever happens on Tuesday. So Wednesday, we just got to have that day to just kind of recover. And then Thursday, we can be refreshed and read the book, right?
That's got to be it. I certainly didn't set the date myself, but I do have to credit my publishers. That's what they had to have been thinking.
So what made you decide that, hey, I want to sit down and crank out 100 plus pages on jobs in the sports world?
Good question. Weird move to do. So I guess to give some background on myself, my undergrad is in sports management, and I worked for a few years within professional sports. And so from that aspect, I've always been curious as to, you know, I watch TV and I watch sports shows, and, you know, I'm involved on Twitter and things like that. And I wonder how, you know, different head coaches came to their roles, and then especially how different athletic directors and general managers, how they, you know, came to take on those different positions. So from the aspect of wanting to work in sports, that's kind of where I was coming from. But then on the other side of that too, you know, you've seen over the past, you know, 10, 20 years with the growth of fantasy football, the growth of games like Madden and NBA 2K and things like that. You know, a lot of people seem to be as interested in the transactions of sports and things of that nature, and recruiting and things like that, even perhaps even more so than what actually happens on the field. So even for people that don't want to work in sports, I think that, you know, this is going to provide insight as to, you know, how the hiring process works, how trades happen, how the draft happens, things like that. So kind of just all encompassing. If you're a sports fan, then, you know, it's probably going to appeal to you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you were talking about your own personal experiences. You know, just looking at your background, you worked in communications for the Toledo Mud Hens, a video coordinator for a sports management firm. You were a writer for the Trenton Trib. So you've personally been able to experience a lot of these things that are talked about in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's especially at the minor league level, I think that's where you're going to get, you know, a real feel for working in sports. You know, I had enjoyed my 2 years with the Mudhens and then enjoyed my other time, you know, working in video coordinating. And ultimately, I'm not working in sports currently, but it did give me certainly gave me an interesting perspective as far as, you know, going into writing the book. I kind of had more of an idea as far as like what to expect. And, but with that being said, you know, I certainly learned a ton from writing it and was certainly surprised by some of the different things that, that I had learned along the way.
So for those who read the book, you know, what kind of approach did you take in laying the whole book out? We heard a lot of concepts about what they're going to get out of it, but how did you construct the book? Because I know you spoke to a lot of different people who work in the industry.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to just almost do it as more of like a progression. So it's the book kind of starts off with, I mean, there's an introduction and things like that, and you get to know some of the main characters involved, but you know, you really kind of start at the start with, you know, how are people getting interviews and things like that. And then once they're contacted for interviews, there's a chapter on the actual interview process and then getting the call and then transitioning from role to role and, you know, then kind of getting more into the day-to-day life of it. So I kind of just wanted to almost give like a chronological timeline of what that entire process of getting hired and then actually working in sports is like.
So you spoke to a number of administrators, coaches, and people who, you know, on the management side who work in the sports field. Some of them may not have like specific media background. What trends did you hear from them in regards to the sports media sides of things?
Yeah, so I think that's continually evolving even up until now, you know, since the book has been written with, you know, coronavirus and whatnot, that's even shifted too. So, you know, I guess one of the things that was noted pretty regularly was that, you know, decision makers when they're making like, whether it be like an athletic director hiring a coach or whatever it may be, or, you know, a trade possibly going down at the professional level, they really... While I would have thought going into it, maybe that they like put some rumors out there to kind of gauge where the fans are at and things like that, that's really not like a thing that they do at all. You know, the fans are certainly an important aspect of any athletic team, but, you know, ultimately the people that are making the decisions are the people that have the most information. So I guess that was kind of surprising to me that from that aspect that, you know, the not using like the media to kind of gauge fan impact and things like that. And, you know, as things have developed again since I've written the book with different athletes taking stands on like social stances and activist causes and things like that. It just, I mean, it creates an entirely different world for, you know, athletic directors and general managers and things like that. It's certainly a lot to balance, and it's becoming even more so as time goes on.
So one of the people you talked to was Philip Fulmer, who's now the athletic director at the University of Tennessee, former coach, head coach for the football team. And obviously he worked with the media on a day-to-day basis, answering questions, conversations, and now as an administrator, now he deals with it on a daily basis. And, you know, whereas before as a coach, he wanted to be a little bit more secretive maybe about things. I don't know if he was or not, but you know, coaches tend to they try to very control any kind of access and really protect their players. And now on the administrative side, they've got communication staffs that they oversee and video productions. Are they changing? Have you seen any changes, like maybe even with Coach Fulmer or anybody else who may have come from the coaching ranks, but now they're overseeing some of the media side of things and how much they want to put out to the general public and how much they value the communication side of things?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like you had mentioned, it's an entirely different dynamic of, you know, working as a coach with the media versus working as an administrator with the media. Because I think, especially in the context of as an administrator, you know, you're working with the media in many ways to promote your own program. Whereas with a coach, you know, you might be talking about X's and O's or, you know, what had happened in so-and-so game. You don't want to give anything out to the media that could possibly go to the other team. But I guess, yeah, the dynamic is completely shifted as, you know, you take on that administrator role. And one of the people that I had spoken to, actually, John Cohen, the athletic director at Mississippi State, prior to being the AD there, he was actually the head baseball coach there for quite some time. So he was kind of gave some great insight as that as well. And that, you know, that pretty much was the case where he was much, much more guarded as a coach versus as an administrator. Now he's realizing the potential of the media and the potential benefits that he can have for his organization, you know, whether it just be, you know, getting ahead of stories or, you know, promoting so-and-so event, something like that. But yeah, you know, it's certainly something that, you know, especially for making that direct jump from head coach to athletic director, it's something that, you know, you really need to learn on the fly, and you need to learn how to flip that switch from not being secretive and guarded to, you know, I need these people within my community.
The whole focus of the book is trying to get a job. And many of our listeners come from the college ranks, while other listeners are experienced, might end up having to interview for a job down the road. It's just the business, and it's the world, and that's how things go. But what are some of the key takeaways on the media and communication side that might be helpful in getting noticed in that flood of resumes they may see for positions that come up? What are some of the takeaways you got from that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on the media side, as far as, you know, how to break in, it ultimately, for one, is going to come down to creating a lot of content and creating a lot of varied content, you know, whether it be in blog form, in podcast form, working with video, just anything you can do to kind of expand your portfolio and show that, like, hey, if you need me here, I can do this. If you need me here, I can do this. I have experience on video, things of that nature. But even beyond that, you know, just kind of speaking generally of, you know, if you're working on the team side, ultimately, you know, one of the bigger things of going into any interview, whether it be sports or not, is you really need to know who you're interviewing with. That was one of the biggest takeaways from the people that I had spoken to, is that, you know, while you may be a super qualified candidate, if you don't know the person, if you can't make a connection with the interviewer, it's just never going to work out. And, you know, you have to work with these people. So, you know, going in and learning some of their background, seeing what you can find out about them, trying to find literally any connection you can, you know, that's going to be put you a huge step forward and kind of make you maybe stand out in their mind.
And another part of your book talks about finding the right fit, and that preparation kind of, the preparation and finding that right fit kind of go hand in hand. And, you know, what one position is like at one organization or school, or university or whatever, that same role might not be the exact same thing there either, will it?
Right. I mean, it's certainly a balancing act too, because, you know, like I'd mentioned before, you know, with sports being working in sports being such like a high demand, or rather a high supply of candidates, there's, you know, while you want to be selective and find that right fit, a lot of times that just simply isn't possible. You know, you go to Teamwork Online or wherever it may be, and there's 100 jobs posted a day, but to each of those jobs, there's probably 150, 200 candidates a day. So while in theory, it is like a great idea to be able to try to find that perfect fit, sometimes you're just going to have to, if this is what you want to do, you're really just going to have to do it. And I would never fault anyone for not wanting to, you know, find themselves in a position where that's not the right fit. But occasionally, just with how the industry is, it's, you might have to work in a job for a year or two that you really don't want. And, you know, across the board, whether it's a perfect fit or not, you really have to be prepared to not make very much money, unfortunately. So that's just kind of the unfortunate reality of working in sports.
Now, you may have an answer for this and you may not, but did anybody share any good interview bomb stories without like mentioning any names? I'm curious if we heard some really interesting train wrecks that people, because you can actually learn from the train wreck. And I'm just curious if you heard of any.
So that is actually something that I asked to each of them, and they really didn't give anything that was particularly, there wasn't anything that particularly stood out. It was most of it really came down to just a lack of preparation. So I guess that would be the takeaway as far as like a positive. You got to be prepared for your interview. You got to know what the job's about. You got to know who you're interviewing with. You got to know your own vision for the job. If you don't have those things, it not that it would necessarily be disastrous, but it could definitely go off track and end in some failure.
So you also mentioned the day-to-day life. You get the job, finding that right balance, working in sports. And some who work outside of the industry or might be new to the industry might look at sports and think, oh my gosh, it's a glamorous lifestyle in some aspects. It's, oh, I get to focus on games and work with the teams and work with the community. And you and I both know that's not always the case. In some cases, yeah, but it's not always the case. It has its perks. But what advice did you hear from the people you spoke with about trying to manage that day to day and achieve potentially, if it's even possible, that good work-life balance once they get that job?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's something that people in sports, and I mean, obviously across other industries as well, but just with the nature of sports, it's something that people struggle with constantly. One of the coaches, when he was elevated to being a head coach, he had set up days for his assistants and himself to have their families come in and have a dinner and things like that, and would have a different day where they go home at 6 o'clock or something to that effect. So just finding avenues where you can just get your family involved is just going to be huge. But you know, ultimately, it really is a grind. And, you know, Dan O'Brien is one of the people that I had spoken to. He was the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds. He kind of laid out his general day for me at the ballpark. And it started with the general go in at 8 and finish normal, like business-related stuff until 5. And then he would wait around for a bit, and the game would start at 7 o'clock, and he'd be at the ballpark till midnight, 1 in the morning, and we would be back around for the next day. And I think that that is probably a more realistic scenario for people that are going to work in sports, especially at an upper level. I know even, you know, working in minor league baseball, I would be able to miss out on the early portion of the day, but I'd go in around 3 o'clock, wouldn't leave until probably 12, 1 in the morning. And, you know, it's when it's rewarding, it's incredibly, incredibly rewarding, and it's an extremely exciting environment to be around. But you know, it can be tough. You know, you can, especially with social media now, you're scrolling through Instagram, you're scrolling through Facebook, and you see you're at the ballpark in the middle of an extra innings game while your friends or your family are out celebrating, whatever it may be. So certainly tough, and I know that I've seen enough fireworks shows probably to hold me over for a long time, that the spark of those has been taken out now that I've seen a bunch of them. But yeah, ultimately, it's going to be incredibly difficult to find that work-life balance, but you just have to find whatever ends that you can. And even if it's just an hour or two, those will add up over time.
Is there anybody that you spoke with that you got done with that interview and you were just like, wow, I got a lot more than I thought I was going to get out of this person, or anybody's story that just really jumps out as like, wow, this person was just a gold mine when it came to information for this book?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, for quite a good portion of the people that I spoke to, that really was the case, is that, you know, I'd have my list of talking points that I wanted to hit on. And sometimes it would be, you know, I talk to them for half an hour or whatever it may be, and that'd be the end of it. But there were a couple of people where I hit a couple of bullet points and that just sends us in a tangent. We end up talking for a couple hours, and, you know, it was those kind of conversations that really went off script more or less, that I kind of really learned from. But I think ultimately probably one of the two bigger ones that I had really gained a lot of information from was Tim Kenny, who is the athletic director at St. Bonaventure. And then Jeff Barber, who is the athletic director at Charleston Southern. Both of them have been in the industry for decades. And Jeff Barber had worked in minor league baseball prior to working on the college athletics side. So just getting to hear the really vast perspective of him. And he had quite a few entertaining stories and things of that nature throughout the book and throughout the time that I talked to him. And then Tim Kenny, he had been an assistant athletic director for quite some time, probably almost 20 years prior to actually jumping into that athletic director role. So he was someone that I kind of really gleaned from of how to find that perfect fit once you're in the opportunity and at the level where you're able to kind of pick and choose a little bit more. So both of those guys were just incredibly valuable in terms of the information that I had gathered from them.
So what's next for you? You got this book coming out next week and in a couple of days, or when it, depending on when people listen to the show, coming out on November 5th. But what's next for you? What are you going to be doing once the book gets out, and what's next steps for you?
That's a good question. So for the time being, I'll be promoting this book and going out doing that, working my full-time job as well. And then sometime next year, I'll have the second book coming out. So I'm keeping the train rolling. I feel like if I stop, I'll probably never start up again.
What's that next book? Did you have so much that you decided, you know what, I'm gonna go for part two? So what's the second book gonna be about?
This one is a little bit off, still sports related, but basically it's called The Outliers, Being a Cultural Anomaly at Sports. So I spoke to around 40 different athletes that come from non-traditional backgrounds within their sports. So like African-American catchers within baseball, Asian-American football players, things of that nature, learning, you know, the challenges that they face kind of being different, or you could say different within their sport, you know, those different challenges, how they overcame them, and then kind of understanding why that is the case, of why, you know, these people aren't represented within their sports, and kind of mapping out how that can be changed moving forward and making sports more inclusive.
Well, that's fantastic. So, well, you got a lot coming up then. You got a lot coming up. There's no shortage of topics in the sports world. So glad that you're getting a chance to dive into these issues. So for the book, You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports, where can people find that starting on November 5th?
The easiest place to find it is definitely going to be on Amazon. You can definitely pre-order it already and have it ready to go for however you're feeling about election day. You can, if you're riding a high, you can sit down with a book. If you're riding a low, you can get out of that with this book. So
that is a great, Amazon. Yeah, it's a great way to look at it, man. That's a great way to look at it. So Amazon's probably the best way.
Got to be the best way. And it may be on Barnes & Noble, but I'm not 100% sure prior to the release date. So just Amazon would probably be the easiest way to find it.
No problem. Well, Brian, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. I appreciate it, man.
No, I appreciate you having me on. It was great to talk to you.
All right. That's Brian Rezepa, author of the new book, You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports, coming out on November 5th.
It's not about the paycheck. It's about respect. It's about looking in the mirror and knowing that you've done something valuable with your day.
It's time to get to work. Here's a few jobs open right now. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee is looking for a multimedia content producer for their downtown Colorado Springs headquarters. This full-time role will create and develop multimedia content for Team USA digital channels. This person will also strategize and tell numerous stories about Olympic athletes. The ideal person should obviously know sports, have experience with content creation, and know graphic design and short-form video production for social media. Salary range is between $59,000 and $75,000 a year. To apply, head to teamusa.org and click careers. 670 The Score in Chicago is looking for a full-time sports talk show host for their PM drive. They want someone who knows the Chicago area and can be a great storyteller. You'd work with a co-host to provide comprehensive coverage of Chicago sports. You'll need 5 years of major market experience for this role, so no rookies. To apply, head to the Entercom website and click careers. Flipping over to TV, WAVY TV 10 in Norfolk needs a sports anchor in MMJ. This person will provide content on all platforms covering local sports in the Norfolk market. This person will also help with the Fox 43 Sports Wrap, the Washington Huddle, the Old Dominion Coaches Show, and Friday Night Flights. To apply, go to Nexstar Media Group's corporate page and click careers. That's it for this episode of the Sports Gig Podcast. Special thanks to author Brian Rezepa for joining us. Be sure to check out the website at sportsgigpodcast.com or follow on Twitter at sports_gig. We'll see you next time.